Session number 12708, Mr. R.W. Hawksworth, Reel 17.
Mr. R.W. Hawksworth, Reel 17. What were the hospital conditions like overall, Mr. Hawksworth?
Well, the hospital to which I was taken for my necessary operation in Naples was quite a good one. Once I'd recovered from the operation and had a chance to look about, I realised I was certainly in good hands. The hospital staff were friendly. The senior people were British or Scottish, but the ward orderlies, the nurses on the wards are mostly Italian girls who've been trained in this sort of work.
The food that you received, was that?
Oh yes, it was good. Everything about the hospital and the general treatment was good. The food was certainly good.
Had it always been a military hospital or been taken over by the military?
No, this was a hospital that had been requisitioned by the army authorities. And I seem to remember it was a Scottish general hospital. Certainly the matron was of Scottish origin.
Were you allowed in? Did you receive visitors?
Yes, I was pleased. After about a fortnight, some people entered the ward, guided by one of these Italian ladies. It turned out to be some people from my own company who'd been sent down on a leave party with a specific instruction to call in and check up on my progress. And I was very pleased to see them. And the next 3 or 4 weeks or so, before I went off to convalesce at Barry on the east coast, I received plenty of visitors.
What was your opinion of the treatment you got?
Well, I can say this in all due honesty. The Indian surgeon who carried out the initial operation on the leg to remove the bits and pieces said he had doubts at the outset as whether he could save at least half of my leg, but he said that they'd had a good go, and he thought the prospects of complete recovery were good, but complications developed, and I think they suspected that I'd contracted a gangrenous wound. The wound wouldn't heal for quite some time, and it was touch and go whether I was about to lose my leg. However, about this time, penicillin came into being, and I suppose I must have been one of the first war casualties out there to be treated with this stuff, and it finally produced the desired result.
How long did the treatment last?
I was in hospital 8 weeks altogether, and on the sixth and seventh week, these penicillin treatment was administered, including a series of some 40 inoculations around various parts of your body. This seemed to do the trick.
Does your leg give you trouble today?
Occasionally, it's not bothersome, but a portion of my lower calf muscle was removed in order to clean my leg up properly before it was closed. And in very cold weather, occasionally, it gives me a twinge. But some years later, after the war, when we were in Greece, for instance, I resumed my athletic career with cross-country running and track running, playing hockey, and I suffered no ill effects from it.
So you don't get a pension for the wound?
No.
At what point did you go on convalescence?
Well, after about the eighth week in hospital, when they were satisfied that I'd made a complete recovery as far as surgery was concerned, I was transferred to Barry, where there was a convalescent camp on the coast, previously occupied by the Italian army. I chummed up there with several of the 17th, 21st Lancer tank drivers who had been badly wounded. And after a fortnight at Barry, where we lolled about on the beach and got thoroughly well again, we were shipped across Italy to a transit camp above Naples.
By what time would this be?
This would be late October or early November.
1944. How long were you then in the transit camp?
Well, as soon as we arrived at the transit camp, we were interviewed at length by an invigilating officer who discovered, much to his surprise, that by that time I'd been abroad almost 7 years, having opted to stay on with the battalion in the Middle East when I had my 6 years in. And he said there was no way at all that I would be allowed to stay abroad. I had to go home for at least 12 months in order to break the service, so to speak. So I was put on a draft awaiting shipment home.
Was this based purely on the length of time you'd been away from home, or did they consider that after all this time and the actions that you were ready for a rest in the terms of war weariness, you might say?
No, they didn't inform me that they considered it from that aspect. The fact was, and I think there was a lot of fuss about this, a lot of us had dodged the issue as far as going back home was concerned, but we didn't want to leave our parent units. And it was, as far as I'm concerned, it was purely on the grounds that I'd been abroad too long.
When did you leave for home?
Early in November. We waited quite some time in Naples. Of course, ships weren't all that easy to get aboard in those days, and the transit camp was full. All UK-based soldiers. But eventually our turn came, and we sailed on some ship whose name I forget for this moment, and eventually disembarked at Liverpool in England.
Before we leave the transit camp, some of them, First World War, were quite notorious. What was this transit camp like? Were you having to do duties?
This was an easy-run transit camp. The base wallers, referred to elsewhere, were a cushy lot, and as long as we kept ourselves reasonably clean, everything was okay. It was terribly overcrowded. The few wooden huts in the area of the sort of a park were crowded to bursting point, and so an ex-bugler of the battalion who was with me from the Convalescent Depot, named Bugler Wainwright by name, scrounged and managed to get a job as post office orderly. So he moved into the only brick building in the transit camp area and became postal NCOs. And we lived it up until the boat finally arrived.
You left for home. How long did the journey take?
Oh, a fortnight, I should imagine.
Was it a pleasant journey?
Yes, we didn't suffer any attacks from the air or from the sea or from beneath. As far as I know, at least we attended our usual boat station drills on occasions when required. But apart from that, the journey was quite uneventful. We were reasonably well looked after, we were fed well, and there was plenty of entertainment on board.
Going home, although of course you'd left your battalion, how did you feel?
I think with a feeling of apprehension. I've been away from home since 1937, and quite a lot had happened since that time, as you've heard. So it would have, certainly with a feeling of apprehension and trepidation, I suppose, too. I knew I was going home to see my parents, and I had this younger sister and a brother who I'd never seen. And so by the time we were almost home to the Port of Liverpool, I was anxiously waiting to get on the train and get home and see everybody.
And you'd received mail regularly from your parents?
Well, intermittently there'd been lulls in the delivery. When a unit's on the move in a battle zone, of course, priority is given to the movement of essential supplies such as ammunition, food and clothing, etc. But generally speaking, we were well supplied with our mail, and it arrived as punctually as possible.
What were your first impressions of Liverpool coming back after all these years?
Well, it was strange. The last dock we saw, of course, was the one in Naples, which was in a terrible state. It had been bombed almost flat. And again, the embarkation jetty had been hurriedly constructed by the port operating Royal Engineer Sapples. Liverpool had also been suffered at the hands of the enemy bombers, of course, but by no means as bad as some of the ports we'd seen. However, the customs officials whipped us through without any undue hesitation, and within a matter of an hour, we were on a train heading towards our eventual destination.
There was no official welcome back?
No. I suppose the best part, almost 1,000 men disembarked from that ship, bound for various destinations, north, south, east and west in the UK. There were a lot of Scottish chaps too, from Scottish regiments. And there were quite a few people like Wainwright and I who'd overstayed their foreign tour, who were at that time, of course, glad to be back on English soil.
Where did you go to?
I was received from the RTO, who carried out a brief documentation, a rail warrant to my hometown of Hull. My name, address, of course, was verified, and I was instructed to get off home as quickly as possible. I was given the train times, my rail warrant, and told that I'd be instructed later by letter where to report.
Were you able to inform your parents?
No, I decided not to. We were warned before we entrained on our various trains that possible delays would occur, and I had second thoughts about trying to contact home by telephone in case there was a delay and cause a bit of a traumatic upset. So I just let things go and hope for the best. As it turned out, we had no trouble at all. And I think I changed trains once, I think, at Manchester or somewhere around there. But within 6 or 7 hours or so, I was back home toward late afternoon.
What was the welcome that you received?
Well, that was quite something. There were there were Union Jacks all hanging out of windows and bunting on lamp standards. Somebody had decorated an old Christmas tree and stuck it in the garden at the front of our house. And quite a few of the neighbours, some of whom had never seen me previously because we'd changed address during my absence, made me most welcome. And of course, there was a great party held that night at home.
How did the neighbours receive you, other than the bunting and stuff? As you were moving around the area during the course of your leave.
Well, the main topic of conversation was how did he get wounded? The head, and incorrectly, of course, lots of them assumed that I'd been sent home on account of my wound, and I had to reassure them that I was quite fit and well in that respect. The fact that I'd been abroad 7 years surprised most people, and when I look back now, it had been quite a time away, but we've been so involved moving from point to point here and then, moving through these various different countries, I suppose I'd lost track of time. But there were parties held here and there, and of course I wasn't the only one who returned in the area. There were several of us, maybe half a dozen in the locality. So the local pub would put to good use in the evenings, and parties, as I mentioned previously, parties were held hither and thither, and I was invited to them all, and we reciprocated. My mum and dad insisted on dragging me around all our local relatives to renew acquaintances. I met a brother and sister who had been born during my absence, which pleased me a great deal. And generally speaking, it was a pretty hectic time. But after a week or maybe a week and a half, a sort of an anticlimax set in, and I felt that I'd met enough people, I'd been to too many parties, and I wanted to sit at home, and for possibly 5 or 6 days I didn't move out of the house. I'd sort of settled into a gloomy mood. My father seemed to realise what it was all about and told my mother to not bother ahead. And eventually I came out of it.
Did your mother fussy through the period?
Oh, yes, yes. She couldn't do enough. She was like Mother Hen all the time. Everybody else got second choice as far as she was concerned, and I was obviously the priority. And also, I suppose, being the firstborn, the eldest son, meant a lot to her. So she was over the moon, and it took my mother a long time to settle down.
You said you had this period of a few days where it was kind of emotional depression situation.
I think it's a combination of factors, really. I realised almost overnight that what I'd been through. I think the cod escape came back a few times, and I realised then how close I'd been to drowning. The wound I received at Vinafro didn't bother me at all. I'd got quite over that. And I think seeing all the neighbours and old friends and sort of created a sense of shock. I think that was the reason for this mood of apathy. But I indicated I got over it, and brothers and sisters were knocking about all the time, and my mother was there, of course. My father was still working on the railway, and he even carted me off with him a few times to see some of the old friends I knew at work, and this helped a great deal.
How long did you leave last?
6 weeks. I was 6 weeks at home. We'd previously been instructed that should any situation arise which required a leave extension, they'll be sympathetically considered. But by this time, like most soldiers, I suppose, even after all the excitement of coming home after such a long time away, we were itching to get back and see what was happening. Until that time, I'd received no written instructions as to where I was to report. But early in the last week of my leave, a letter arrived from our regimental depot instructing me to report there on such and such a date. And this was to the regimental depot, which at that time was at Bransworth Castle in County Durham.
What date was this?
Shortly around Christmas time, as I remember. Yes, it was around Christmas time, or thereabouts. I have a terrible memory for dates. But I believe it was around the back end of the year anyway.
You've been home for quite a while. How did your parents take the fact that you were going off soldiering again?
My father thought it was for the best. At that time, I was still serving a 9-year contract as far as the regular army was concerned, so I had some years to go. But Mother was a bit concerned about my war wound, as she used to call it. She wouldn't hear of an accidental wound. It was a war wound as far as she was concerned, and that was it. And she took a bit of convincing that I wasn't going to come home eventually hobbling around on crutches or a couple of sticks. So she took it all in good part, and also she was rather upset when I eventually boarded the train to report back for duty. She seemed to have recovered somewhat.
What was the reception like at Bransworth when you arrived?
One black spot on the calendar, as far as I'm concerned. I'd been promoted Land Sergeant in Italy in the line, and in fact given a platoon on account of the full sergeant being taken out of the line through war weariness or whatever. I had my own platoon as a Land Sergeant until I was wounded. I'd eventually got home and recovered. And the day I reported to Bransworth, I dumped me little bit of kit outside the sergeant's mess and walked in, which was full of all sorts of odd chaps from different regiments. And I was approached by the chief clerk at that time, who said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Hawksworth." He said, "Oh, you're only a bloody Land Sergeant now. You see, you'll have to get that third stripe off." And so I put the glass of beer down, which I'd by that time half consumed, told me he was welcome to it, and walked out.
Some way in which they would know your lance, there's some insignia on your arm that points to you being a Land Sergeant.
No. In our regiment, certainly in our battalion, a sergeant was a sergeant was a sergeant, and there was no distinctive mark to indicate that you were not a full sergeant or a substantive sergeant, but certainly they would know, because the records would be passed to England, certainly records of promotions, and therefore I would have appeared on the NCO's roll at regimental quarters. By that time, of course, I'd certainly carried my third sight for 6 months or more.
You must have been very angry, because these people, certainly this gentleman, had never been out of the country in action.
I can't remember the person's name accurately, and I would hesitate to mention any other name in case it caused embarrassment. But yes, I was, naturally. I was upset. Incidentally, Bugler Wainwright, or Sergeant Wainwright as he was, who had come with me home, had reported back on the same day. He was a substantive sergeant, and he was rather upset when it happened, and followed me out of the mess and said, what was I about to do? And I said, I'm taking this bloody third stripe off and they can have it.
Was this the only unpleasant aspect of returning?
Yes, the only fly in the ointment, to coin an old phrase. I was upset, quite upset. In fact, having talked for a few moments to Wainwright, we agreed to meet later. I went straight to the corporal's mess, attached to the NAFI. The sad tale became known immediately amongst the assembly, and the NAFI manageress volunteered to do the necessary alterations on the spot, which I gratefully accepted. So an hour or two later, somewhat revived with liquor refreshment, I walked out as a full corporal.
What were you doing in the time that you were at Brandsburg?
The only thing that most people were doing at that time, apart from the odd people in training, were they were either in transit, awaiting posting elsewhere, or menial tasks around the camp, such as coal fatigue or barrack room cleaning, etc., delivering rations to their married families. But apart from the daily muster parade, which was held at 9 o'clock every morning, there was little or nothing else to do. But we amused ourselves. There was a football field and a hockey pitch, and the usual gymnasium. So we were well prepared for how to act in our leisure time.
Were you hoping to get away quickly?
Yes, this was the first time I'd seen this wartime regimental depot, although in later years I was to be more or less in charge of the place. But it wasn't at this time of the year, of course, the winter was setting in, and it was rather a dreary place, to say the least. And much to my delight, I was called into the office after about a fortnight at Brandsburg and told about my future.
What was that future to be?
Well, I'd been told that owing to my reputation as a weapon training instructor and the knowledge thereof, I was being posted on a temporary basis as an instructor to a training division which was situated down in Sussex. The battalion to which I was to be attached was the 5th Battalion West Yorkshire Regiment.
Did that mean a change of cab bite?
Well, when I arrived down at this West Yorkshire battalion, accompanied once again by Wainwright, much to my joy, we were interviewed at great length. This time of my life, everything seemed to be long interviews. But the company commander there decided that I would be placed on the staff as an instructor, as an assistant weapon training instructor to the weapon training officer, and I took up my duties almost immediately. And a week later, I was sent for and told to put my third stripe back on, and I once again became a sergeant.
How long were you with this training unit?
Almost 12 months to the day. I joined them around the December time, and the following early November, I sailed with the battalion to which I'd been attached to the Italian mainland, to Naples, in fact.
The war ended, of course, whilst you were there. Do you recall the ending of the war?
Well, VE Day occurred when our battalion, the Yorkshire Battalion, were at a place called Porthcawl on the South Wales coast. Being a weapon training waller, I was called upon to provide the necessary pyrotechnical displays, and we greeted our friends across the Bristol Channel with various coloured flares, etc., smoke bombs. The whole sea front was lit, and a terrific celebration went on. Beer was flowing up and down the streets. We had a hell of a time. So that we were in Porthcawl as the war finished, and shortly before we moved up to Scotland to embark for Italy, the war finished entirely.
What were your reactions to the end of the war, the end of fighting?
I think it caused no change of feeling as far as I was concerned. Things still went on. We weren't actively engaged. Possibly, if we'd been in a trench somewhere or engaged in an action, things might have been different. We would have certainly been in a different mood. But as far as we were concerned, it was finished. Whenever the opportunity presented itself, we retired to the nearest pub and talked about it. But we certainly didn't go overboard or do anything drastic.
Did you have thoughts ranging over your experiences of the war at this moment in time? People you know that had gone, and so on?
Yes. During the interim, had lost my one-time mate, Wainwright, the ex-bugler, who was a sergeant. He successfully applied to be transferred to the police, the Jamaican Police Authority. So he'd gone off, and I found, much to my pleasure anyway, that there were one or two ex-Durhamite men joining this training battalion in order to travel abroad with them. So I wasn't left on my own as far as that's concerned. There must have been five or six Durhamite infantry soldiers attached to this battalion when we eventually left Glasgow bound for Naples.
Were there any regrets in your thinking of what had gone on during the war, the experiences?
None at all. I think had I been asked at that time, as the war had finished, what would I do if I had the chance to do it all over again? I would certainly have done it, the bad and the good. It was I'd certainly been in good company most of the time. Even crossing the Aegean Sea, I was in good company. But if they'd come along and said, "Here's your ticket," I'd have refused it.
During the whole of your war experience, Mr. Hawksworth, had you formed opinions of higher command, of men in higher command, at any stage?
Well, as a common or garden infantry man, especially light infantry man, alongside all my comrades of all ranks, certainly non-commissioned, I joined them in believing that it was a soldier's privilege to criticise everything that moved, and certainly anything that we didn't agree with. The cook sergeants being the main target, of course. Certainly, in the army of the day at that time, lines of communication as far as internal messages were concerned was severely restricted. But very rarely were we told, until we were almost there, our intended destination. And although we usually managed to get on with the job and finish it in a proper manner, I consider that if, as in fact is the case today, I'm led to believe, a little bit more down-to-the-men information had been the vogue, life might have been a bit more interesting. Most of the time, one was asking one friend, who knew little or less than yourself, what are we going to do next, or where are we going to next?
Were there any particular instances and situations during the war when you felt a real, or to be really critical of a commanding officer?
No, I quite honestly say no, I wasn't. I'm not I don't consider myself to be of a higher intelligence bracket than anybody else, but on occasions when we received certain orders, our immediate response on the spot was to be critical if we thought it was necessary. But I usually took the attitude that the commanding officer was commanding our battalion and not the bloody brigade. And even the brigade commander received his instructions from division. So it was usually people in what is commonly referred to as the war box who got the bullets, as far as we were concerned.